Mo'adim l'simcha, today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, on this first day of the Omer Tov Shin Pei, is daf Lamed Hei, and we are learning La'aliyat Nishmat, Zelda Bat Yerachmiya. Okay, so the last thing that we learned, Rabosai, was the machlokes about the shir of how to understand Reb Yudas Ben Hashmoshes, and we ended up with a very minor difference between the Rabbah's understanding of Reb Yehuda and Reb Yosef's understanding, which was 1/12 of a mil, which depending on how you learn a mil is about a minute and a half, where the bigger shear would bring us to 2 minutes. Our standard mil we take is the 18 minutes, which is how we get the 72 minutes of the Rabbeinu Tam, as we'll see later on today. In any event, the machlokas over here, according to Rabbah, is slightly larger, and according to Reb Yosef, is slightly less. Right? But over here, the Pogomor is saying you should know that it's not always that way. I mean, Rabbah, the way to remember another machlokas between Rabbah and Reb Yosef is to think about our learning of Masechet Kelim. And over there, we remember that we have the machlokas about the Bor Svinat Alexandrit and the general definition of what is considered to be a Kli Eit that, since it's compared to Sak, has to be Metalta Molevarekam, and the Shear of which it's no longer considered to be a Kli, which was that it holds actually arbaim sa, so of liquid. And at that point, it's not considered to be a kli because you can't carry it around. It's too heavy. Now, the question over here is, what about lagabi mukta? Would it also be considered a kli like that that wouldn't be able to be moved, which lagabi tuma, perhaps according to some tanoim, remember we had a machlokas over there, would be not considered to be a kli? Is that true lagabi muktzah as well, that if it cannot be makabel tuma, it's also considered to be muktzah because it's not a kli, and it's like a rock bialma, right? So actually, the sheer lagabi a din of kli b'muktzah is the opposite. We're over there, Rabba over there says the shorter, the smaller sheer. So doma Rabba chalta batre kuri. If there's this basket that you have that can hold two core is basically 60 sa, and that is a shari little tule. So this would be quite a bit. This would be about over 400 liter. So that would be mutter still to move around. But once it holds three core, then it's usher to be metalta. Whereas Rav Yossi says, no, three is mutter, four is usher. So now, obviously, here they're reversing which direction they're going, more or little. It's not necessarily it's related, except for the strange fact that everything that has to do with Shabbos is somehow related to Tuma, Ladat, Ki Ani Hashem Mekadishchem, as we've pointed out earlier. Amar Abaye, Bo Emine Demar, B'Shas Maisa. I could tell you that I asked Rabbah an actual halacha l'maisa because I needed to carry something on Shabbos. And it is not the way you're saying it. Over here, he says you can definitely move it around if it has two car. He didn't even allow me to carry two car. So I don't know, maybe changed his mind. So who was he going like? The way he told Abaye, come on. Ki haitana like our Mishnah in Kelim Ditzan. Kaver takash, kaver takanim, ubor svina alexandrit. So if you've got this large straw basket or reed basket or the type of ship that carries fresh water for drinking. And that was this famous, they called it the bor. Obviously, it was made out of, it wasn't a real bor, it was on a ship, but it was the equivalent of a bor that held their drinking water in a wood coated with waterproofing tar. So the din is over there, alpha pishesh lem shulayim. They may be flat, which means that they could stand on their own. And remember, that was a very important component of what defined a kli in Masechet Kelim. The fact is, if they can hold arba'im sa'ah of liquid, which are the equivalent of holding two kor, which is 60 sa'ah of solid, then they're tahar, they can't be makabel tuma because they're too big. Why can it hold more solid? Obviously, because the amount of liquid that you can put above the edge of the kli is limited, very limited, and only gives you a tiny bit of surface tension that will allow it to creep up above the edge. Masha Enkein, when you're carrying solid, you can put a whole pile of stuff on there as long as it doesn't start falling off all over the place. In which case, says Abai, you know what you see from here? You see that the relationship of the Godesh is how much extra you pile on top of a container, that this would be in the normal way in which you make a basket equals 1/3 of the total. because you have the over here you can hold 60, and that means it's 20 sa out of the total of 60 sa was added to the 40 sa of the liquid. Okay, getting back now to the shear of Bein HaShemashah. So we had a long discussion about the different shitas among the Tanoim and then the different shitas among the Amoraim about what was the das of the Tanoim, particularly Rabbi Yehuda. And everything that we had said over there had to do with the eastern horizon, as you will recall. And the idea was that we're looking at the reflection of the sun in the upper atmosphere all the way on the other side where the sun would have still been visible, obviously, if you were standing at that height above the earth. So now the question is, in practical terms, that's a bit of a problem. The reason that it's a bit of a problem is because it's all very nice to talk about the reflection out of the west all the way to the upper atmosphere in the east when the air is clear. However, that is not something that's going to happen all that often. Usually there's going to be some kind of fog, smog, cloud. And therefore, in terms of the halakha l'maisa, it's not the way you would look to be sure that it was dark, because you really don't know that it's not going to be shining off of the east because it's late. It could be it's not shining off of the east because there's a cloud in the way, and therefore you can't rely on that. So when it comes to actually taking a measurement of the sky, you're much safer looking towards the west. Why then did the Tana not tell us to look to the west in the first place? So the Achronim explain that the halacha as given to look towards the east is the actual halacha, and it makes a big nafkamina, because what it's coming to tell you is the shiur that we mean when we talk about Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimim. If I would have told you Pnei Ma'arav Ma'adimim, so then there's always a little bit towards the west, there's a little bit of reddening, and you would have thought that that Ma'adimim was the shiur that we're talking about. That's why we talk about the effect of the light coming from the west to the east, that when we're saying Ma'adimim, we mean it's strongly Ma'adim, enough that if the sky would be clear, it would actually be shining off of the upper sky towards the east. But once I understand that, I can learn to estimate by looking to the west what would have illuminated the sky on a bright, on a clear day. So once I understand that, the place to look is not towards the east, the way it said. The place to look practically is to the west. And therefore, it was very shocking to Abaye when he didn't know this. And he thought that, look, the Braita says, look to the east. That means you have to look to the east. He didn't realize that it was only saying, look to the west to the extent that it would have been able to light up the east. So when he saw Rava, who's looking over to the west in order to see whether it was time for Shabbos or not, he said to him, wait a minute, you're looking in the wrong direction, aren't you? Or Maleva Tanya calls Manship name is Rachmadimim. It said Beferish, that you have to look to the eastern sky on top to see whether it's going to be illuminated. Oh, Marley, what? You think that that means Pnei Mizrach Mamash, that that's where you should look to? No. It's giving the shear of the Panim HaMa'adimim et HaMizrach. Look to the west, which is like a window, which would have lit up the eastern sky, assuming that the conditions, atmospheric conditions, were proper. But that's just the amount of redness. But in terms of where to look, you have to look to that, so to speak, window. Ikeni Amri. Others say that Rava saw Abaye that was looking to the east, according to the way that the Braita said. So Rava said to him, excuse me, but the Misavarta Pnei Mizrach Mamash? No, that's not where to look. Panim HaMa'adimim et HaMizrach, the way to think about this is to see the sun as if it's shining through a window, a Simanach HaKavta, where the wall across the window is going to be light, and you can actually tell how light it is outside if it's enough to get to the wall on the other side of the house. But it doesn't mean you're going to look at the wall in order to be able to determine what the weather's like outside. You look to the window. And that's the same over here. Okay, now, we said before that according to Rabbi Nechemia, we spoke about the Chatzimiel, and Rabbi Nechemia wants to give you a practical way. The Gemara wants to give you a practical way to understand Rabbi Nechemia. So remember that Rabbi Nechemia said in the Braita, Kadeshi Halech Adam Shetishka Chava Chatzimiel, which again, according to the Shitas that we take in this length of a meal, is, which we take to be 18 minutes, is 9 minutes. And Rabbi Hanina said, there's a practical application of this. The practical application is, let's say you're a Kohen and you want to eat Truma. It's Erev Shabbos. Do you have enough time left to be able to get into the mikveh and come back and eat? So this would be a way in which we could actually give you a concrete definition of the Shir of Rabbi Nechemia. Sarotzile da Shir Shir Rabbi Nechemia. And, I mean, you know the type of Kohen we're talking about who'd want to do that kind of thing. It's undoubtedly Elio. In any event, you're up there on the top of Har Carmel, okay? So you're looking across at the horizon. To you, up on the mountain, the sun seems to be directly across. Now, that means that down on the ground, it's going to be much closer to Shkia. Okay, so you leave the sun across you. You run down Har Carmel. You jump into the sea in Haifa. Then you turn around, and it's still daytime when you got into the sea. That's the point. It was a kosher tefillah. You then climb back up Har Carmel, and by the time you get up to your house or your cave, you would be able to eat truma because the Bein HaShemashos would be over. So that means that, I mean, you're in pretty good shape. Let me tell you if you could do this. But in any event, that is the shear. In a practical way, Tosafos understands it. You'd be able to do the tefillah right before the beginning of Bein HaShemashos, and it would be kosher because it was biyom, and then it would be already Laila by the time you got back up. Actually, once we're talking about Har HaKarmel, you might as well take advantage of your tour, as your tour guide will tell you, look right over there, out to the sea, and you can see sort of like this rock in the middle of the ocean, you know, and it looks something like a sieve. Well, that is the Be'era Shel Miriam that was hidden over there. And get a good shot of that. And everybody will be certain that they saw something, which is a bit of a problem since the Medrash says that actually Be'era Shel Miriam is hidden in the Yam HaKineret, which today has reached only 29 centimeters from its absolute fullest. And it's continuing to rain today, Bezrat Hashem. And the snows are continuing to melt on the Hermon.
As of today, it's 27 centimeters.
Okay, that's great. Not according to that crazy site of the official site, but I always.
No, the official site. The official site is 27 centimeters.
Oh, really? Okay, so that they changed it from early in the morning when I looked. Okay, that's great. 27. That's wonderful. Okay.
It's supposed to be updated at
8 a.m.
every day.
Oh, so I looked at it early. Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Heavy dew. Boy, that's some heavy dew. Listen, I got to admit that I'm fully in favor of these amazing rains, especially since they're not affecting anybody, right? Because everybody has to be indoors, and the rain doesn't put out the fire on the Mizbeach, so there's certainly no problem. So it seems to be everything in good shape. What's that?
In Eilat, the sun is shining.
Yes, the sun always shines on Richie.
Ready? We're doing an awful lot of hand washing.
Baruch Hashem. Well, hopefully we won't use up the whole Yam HaKineret. So, anyway, let's get back to it. So in this case, in the Medrash, it talks about standing on top of the mountain above the Kineret and looking at the Kineret. So, and if you are a tour guide, it's good to know both of these because it depends where you're touring. And everybody will certainly talk about it when they get home, about the wonderful Be'er Shel Miriam that they saw in the middle of the Yam. Omar Rav, you should know that a Mayana Mitaltel Tahor. Suppose you have, this is a great thing to have, especially when you're traveling to the moon or Mars, you take along a well that you could put into a box, you know, and don't think that just because you put the well into the box that therefore that made the Mayim into Mayim She'uvim, because since it's a well, it still remains tar and it's able to betar you and you can get into the mikveh in the box. Of course, there's no such thing except for the Be'era Shel Miriam. So once we're on the topic, and we want to talk about Tumah V'Taira and so on, that's a good idea. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you should know that the Bein HaShemashot of Rabbi Yehuda is actually the entire Bein HaShemashot. Up to the very last minute, you could still go to the mikveh if you were tummy as a coin, and you could eat truma that evening. What? What are you talking about, man? No, man, what do you mean? He can't mean according to Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, Rabbi Yehuda is good for saying it's Bein HaShemashos, and that therefore it's a suffix, and you can't. It's fake-o. No, what he means is the entire Bein HaShemashos of Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yossi, is mamish the yom. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, you would be able to go to the mikveh during that time, and you would still be Tevo in the middle of the day. I think it was Brauneo pointed out that this is a perfect day to start talking about Be'erah Shel Miriam and preparing for Shira and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the beginning of all of the wonderful times of the Nisim and Iflos and the Midbar and all part of the Dayenu that we recently spoke of. Okay, says the Gemara, isn't that pshita? I mean, look, everybody knows. I mean, the truth is, of course, it isn't pshita to us because we were not aware of this, but apparently everyone was aware of the fact that for sure Rabbi Yossi's Bein HaShemashos was always an issue after Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, Rabbi Yossi says it's basically an instant, right? So if it's an instant, so it's Erev Ayin, I mean, that's an instant, is after Rabbi Yehuda, that we wouldn't have known. But it was known, so we said it's Pshita. Answers the Gemara, it isn't Pshita anyway, because the blink of the eye that we're talking about could have included the tenth of a second at the end of Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos, right? And in that case, it would not be correct to say that any time that you're traveled to enter the Bein HaShemashos for Rabbi Yehuda, it's definitely good for a coin. That wouldn't be true. So Shmuel is coming to say, you should know that Rabbi Yossi's Bein HaShemashos is completely separate from Rabbi Yehuda's, has nothing to do with it. First, we complete the whole time of Shalom Bein HaShemashos of Rabbi Yehuda, and then at some point later, Tosu says, it doesn't mean right away, but at some point later, Hoder Matchil Bein HaShemashos to Rabbi Yossi. That's when you have the next one. Omer Rabba Rabba Chanan Rabbi Yochanan. You should know that when it comes to Shabbos, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, because you'll have to be Machmer on Erev Shabbos to make sure that the entire time is considered to be Laila. V'halacha K'Rabbi Yossi, who says the time is day, but you can't rely on him because it might be Chilul Shabbos. But halacha is like Rabbi Yossi le'inyan truma, which obviously in the end is going to turn out meaning that if you want to eat truma, you're going to have to be machmir, and you have to wait until even Rabbi Yossi's is over, which is Tosfos's raya that Rabbi Yossi's can't begin immediately after Rabbi Yehuda, because what would be the practical implications of saying keheref ayin after? I mean, by the time you get to the truma into your mouth, it's already automatically terrifying. So therefore, there must be some time period between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Anyway, so let's understand what was meant. So Bishlam Alok Rabbi Yehuda Linyan Shabbos, I understand what that means. L'chumra, that if it's Friday and you want to do Malacha, you can't because it's already a suffix. But what would mean the meaning of truma? I mean, if you're talking about that it's still good for going to Bitevo, that's not true. Because it's Dafka, Rabbi Yehuda would say it's a suffix. How could you possibly tell? We'd have to be machmer on a d'oraisa. Ella, what it clearly means is if you want to eat your truma and you're not sure that it's already nighttime, that's what it means. You cannot eat until the Bein HaShemashos of Rabbi Yossi would be complete, and then, only then, it would definitely be night. On Rabbi Yehuda Mishmu, Kochav Echad Yom, if there's one star in the sky, it's still broad daylight. If there's two stars in the sky, then it's Bein HaShemashos. And when three stars come out, it's already nighttime. Tanya Nami Yachikov, Chav Echad Yom, Shnayim Bein HaShemashos, Shalosh Alayla, just like Shmuel said. However, the Bright explains, we are obviously talking about medium magnitude stars. So Loko Chavim Gedolim, Hanir Ime, Beyom, there are very large, small magnitude stars, which could be seen even by day. And we're not talking about Kochavim Ktanim, that are only deep at night, finally you can make out. We're talking about Beinoniim. Now, obviously, you're going to have to be quite an expert to be able to know what that is, and therefore the absurdity of silly people looking up at the sky and seeing three stars is horrifying. Anyway, the other question over here is that when we weren't sure about what the halacha was, so it means it's Sufik Yom, or Suffolk Laila, or Suffolk Min Ayom Umin Halaila. So what would that mean, Lagabe Shabbos? Lagabe Shabbos, it would mean that if somebody did Melacha, he would have to bring an Oshem Toloi, because he wasn't sure that he was over on a Melacha B'shogeg, and that he has to bring a Chatas. So it points out, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Zvida, it's possible to do Melacha Bein HaShemashos and to be Mechayev a Chatas Vadei. How is that? Because if you do the malacha the entire time of both Bein HaShemasha, it's on Erev Shabbos, and on Matzah Shabbos, so then one way or the other, you definitely did a malacha on Shabbos, because one of them was either one was, if they're Pshyom, so then the one Matzah Shabbos was still Shabbos, and if it's Laila, the one on Erev Shabbos was already Shabbos. Omer Le Rava L'Shami. So Rava said to the person who was Shamishim, he said, listen, it's very, very difficult for regular people to know precisely what the Rabbanon are talking about when they're talking about the three stars or when they're talking about the Shir of Halicha. Aton delokim lecho b'shir de Rabbanon. So you don't really know. So make sure you've got enough time that you're far away from Chas v'Chalila coming to any kind of Chilul Shabbos. So what you should do is when the sun is at the height of the palm trees in your area, even though obviously it's still broad daylight, but that's the time already to be Madlik Neres before Shabbos, and then you can already start closing down. What would you do if it's cloudy and you can't see if the sun is going to be Birosh the Kolim? Well, it depends where you are. If you're in a city, then the thing that you could look at would be all of the roosters that are around. The roosters during the day, they like to hop up on the fences and on the windowsills and so on. If they're still doing that, it's Yom. If they're already like getting off, they're getting ready for night, and they are very sensitive. So basically what the Gemara is doing is it's talking about different ways in which you would be able to pick out, with ultraviolet maybe or infrared, you'd be able to pick out, and since there are other animals or plants that are sensitive to other wavelengths of light that your eyes are not sensitive to. So it's a brilliant idea. You can't make out the sun, but they can. So a tarnagol knows when the sun is setting. A orev, if you're in a field, so then look at the crows. The crows know also. Same thing, they get down to the ground. Or you can always look at adane. Adane, some type of sunflower. In other words, a type of plants or veggies. Rashi says here it's a veggie. But the type of plant that is sensitive to the sun and that moves along with the sun, like sunflowers do. So in the morning, they're drooping towards the east when the sun rises. They then stand up at noon, and then they start going to the west. So as the sun is setting, you can tell by looking at the plant where exactly the sun is in the sky. And that would be the way to be able to tell. So, okay, now obviously we have a problem over here with all of these funny shiurim. The problem is that the shiur changes every single day. Because remember that what we're talking about over here fundamentally is the angle of the sun vis-a-vis your position on the surface of the earth. I mean, if you are not holding at the equinox and you're not standing at the equator, so then are these shiurim meant or are they not meant? Because every single day, imagine the situation, right? So every single day, as the earth begins tilting towards the northern hemisphere, and now it gets to be summertime, then the angle at which the sun is going to be affecting the earth, let's say you were sitting at the pole, you would notice this very, very well, right? Because over there, your sunset, originally, which took 12 hours, is gradually getting to taking no time at all, and it doesn't even set. You know, and obviously whatever the angle of attack is, it's going to be that much longer for the sun to fall beyond the horizon because it has to travel that much further because of the additional angle of the earth's tilt. So none of this makes any sense whatsoever. So therefore, the way that we understand it, this is the way the Gra understands it, it ties in also with the other shiurim because it's going to affect everybody, obviously. This, by the way, was one of the reasons that we were docha the Rabbeinu Tam, because it would turn out, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that there was no night in many places of the earth where people lived. You couldn't live in London because it never became night. Couldn't live in Budapest because it never became night, and so on, which is ridiculous. Time is many of those who were docha the Rabbeinu Tam. How can you say that so many places that are part of the Yishuv B'nai Adam has no night, la halacha? As Richie can tell us, what it takes to finish Shabbos, waiting
until... when the sun really never gets dark.
Exactly. Yeah. The so-called night, it's still Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimim very clearly all night long. So the way that the Gra understands it is, we're talking, all of the shiurim were made at the latitude of Yerushalayim and at the equinox. So it's only really a good shiur for one day the entire year. Okay, 2 days rather, the entire year, right? So that means that you're gonna have to adjust every single day, not only what time Shkia is, but how long Ben Hashmashas is. Because all of this is going to change because the angle of the sun under the earth changes. So what the sun would travel, so to speak, from your point of view at the equator on a day when it's directly across you and goes straight down, zoom, is totally different from when it has to go 23 degrees to get down. It does not go zoom, it goes, which is going to take much longer. So all of this is therefore needs to be calculated very carefully every day, and which is why we're saying, look, you guys are not going to be able to work this out, because in those days it appears that they didn't have iPads and phones and naval observatories and so on, which might make it a little difficult to do all of these shiurim. So that's one issue. Now there's another very, very famous question here. And that question is, Rabbi Yehuda is soser himself totally. And this gives rise to the Rabbeinu Tam. Chaim, Chaim. So basically, over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he talked about walking 3/4 of a meal. Remember, we went with Shlosha Chalkei Meal, we said meant 3/4 of a meal. The same Shita of Rabbi Yehuda in Psachim says that actually it's the amount of time that you can walk arba milim. Now, how in the world is that supposed to be consistent? Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam learns that they're completely consistent, and we're referring to two completely different meanings of misha tishka hachama. And this is the basis of the entire approach of the Rabbeinu Tam, that the misha tishka hachama of Rabbi Yehuda in Psachim is what we call Shkia. What we call Shkia is the body of the sun, the disk of the sun slips beneath the horizon. There, says Rabbeinu Tam, it takes 4 mil until it gets dark. 4 mil on the equator at the time of the, or at Yerushalayim, according to the Gra, at the equinox, is the shear, and therefore it would take you, if you take the shear of 18 minutes per mil, the famous 72 minutes of the Rabbeinu Tam, 4 times 18. That's how that whole thing comes about. In realistic terms, there's only 2 days out of the year, if you're living in Yerushalayim, that the Rabbeinu Tam is 72 minutes, in which case the whole thing is a little bit ridiculous, because most of the time, if you're in the winter time, the amount is going to be completely different than if you're in the summertime. The amount is going to be completely different, maybe up to 90 minutes, 95 minutes, or maybe forever, which was one of the problems of the Rabbeinu Tam, if you're living in Helsinki. So then it's forever. Then there is no time at which you can complete the equivalent in terms of degrees. There is no time at all that Shabbos will ever be over, which doesn't seem to make much sense. This is one of the profound Gemaras in which we discuss all of these issues, and this is the Makor that many others say that the Rabbeinu Tam is only one possibility. Maybe he changed his mind. Maybe that was his Shita Lechatchila. Oh, I forgot to say, but the Rabbeinu Tam holds that the Shkia that we're talking about over here is what we call Sof Shkiasa. Sof Shkiasa is when even the reflections of the sun are completely missing out of the sky, and that would be much, much later. So after Arba meal, which includes the 3/4 of a meal of a year, only then does it grow dark. Now, the Shita, which is called the Shita of the Ge'enim, which is the Shita of the Gra, is that Rabbi Yehuda here is the Shir. As far as the Shir in Psachim, the Ge'enim understand that Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind, and that this was Besayf Yamav, this was a Shita. The Gra says there's no need to say you changed the mind. He speaks about two different things. In one case, he talks about Laila, and in the other case, he talks about Seita Kochavim. Those aren't the same things. Seita Kochavim that he was referring to that takes Arba Mil, he meant the time in which all of the stars would then be visible, even those stars that are only visible by Laila. So when we use the word Seita Kochavim loosely, we're talking about the Seita Kochavim of three stars. That's not what he was talking about, of three medium-sized stars. So Lemaisa, in terms of the amount of time that we're talking about, the Gra and the Shita Sagainim is one and the same. And that's the Shita, that's three quarters of a mil. In terms of how to understand the Gemara Pesachim, it's not the same, because the Gra learns there's no stira. There's a difference between the words Laila and the words Seita Kochavim. And the Gaonim learned that he changed his mind. Anyway, that in very, very brief are the various shitas that we should take into consideration. Tana Rabbana. In practical terms, takonas were made by various communities to alert the people to the fact that Shabbos is coming. So Tana Rabbana, the takona was to blow shesh tikiyot tokin erev Shabbat. These shesh tikiyot consist of tikiya, trua, tikiya, tikiya, trua, tikiya. So, when you have the first one, Rishona tells people that are outside in the field, and it's going to take them a long time to get back home, stop work and get moving. So that's Lav Tileta Ami Malacha Shebesadot. The second one was to tell people in town it's time to close the stores and to get home. So that's Lav Tila Ir Vachanuyot. The third one is when it was already time for Hadlokas Neros, which again, let's say 20 minutes before 40, whatever the shir was, in that community. Reb Yehuda Hanasi Omer, actually, the Shlishit was there to tell people that it's time to take off tefillin before Shabbos, because it's almost nighttime. And if you're wearing tefillin, it's time to take your tefillin off. It's only the fourth one that would be Me'orer people to light the candles. And then, after the third one, the one who was appointed to do the tekiya, he would wait the time that it takes to either do a tzli of a dakatan, so that means to broil a tiny fish, or the amount of time it would take to put a little bit of dough against the side of the walls in time for it to just bake enough to be nikram panav. And then he does a tekiya with a following trua and a tekiya, because then he shovet. So what do we do? Says Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, these Bavliyim, there's such chutzpah that they do tekiya, and then they do a tekiya. It'll turn out that it means, and then they do a tekiya and a trua, but they don't do tekiya, trua, tekiya, which means that they start Shabbos on a trua. It's not right. Wait a minute, what do you mean? They just do tekiya and trua, then they only have chamesh tekiyas. The takana for sure was shesh tekiyas. No, they do have shesh, but what they do is like this. They do tekiya, and then instead of the tekiya trua tekiya, they do tekiya, and then they do again tekiya trua, instead of trua tekiya at the end. Which means they do have six, but they end and are sheves mitach trua, not mitach tekiya. Says the Gemara, that wasn't part of the takana. It's minig avazim biyadeyim. The takana was shesh. As to whether it needs to be dafka mitocha tekiya that you're sheves, that wasn't a chiyav. Ma'asin la-Rabbi Yehuda la-Rabbi Yitzchak Berei. Rabbi Yehuda said it over differently, and we're wondering where he gets it from. So Rabbi Yehuda was teaching Rabbi Yitzchak, and he said, Shnia l'adli ketaner, which nobody held. It was Shnia. Come on. That doesn't go not like Rabbi Nassim, that it was three, and not like Rabbi Yehuda Nassi, that it was four. So something's funny. You're right. We must have gotten the story wrong. He must have taught his son, Shlishit l'adli ketaner. And Shlishit would be true if he was going alib the Rabbi Nassim. Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, to get more detail, the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael says the Shesh Tekiyas that you're taking on Erev Shabbos was like this. You start to do the initial Tekiyah, so then all of the ones who are out working in the field, they have to put away their tools, no more Mila Ador, Mila Achrosh, there was no more digging, there was no more plowing, no more hoeing, and they would stop doing anything at all. Mila Asor Koma L'Chasher B'Sadot. Now, the ones who were close were not allowed, even though they put away their tools, they were not allowed to come into town. Why? Because if they're close, they're going to get into town, let's say, in 2 minutes. And then people further away, it's going to take them 10 minutes. People further away will look as if they didn't pay attention to the tequillas. And people will start talking about them. So because of that, we made a tacona that all workers should come in one big band. And of course, it also makes a tumult and it's a covered Shabbos. And so everybody should wait until the ones who are far away. And then akrovim rishaim likanes ad sheyavoh rechokim. Then you can sukulam yachad. Beautifully, everyone walks in together. Now, it's still not time for the stores to shut down because the chanuyot are still open. The trisim are munachim. Remember, we had the earlier when we were talking about hotzah. They would take down the covering of the window, would fall down, and they would use it as a counter to put out all of the various things they were selling. And when the second tekiya would sound, so at that point, the trisim in town, while these people out in the field were coming into town, nistalku atrisim v'ninalu hachanuyot. So at the second tekiya, the trisim would be slammed back into place, meaning all of the schora had to be taken off. The stores were locked. But when it came to the household, you've got the hot water cooking up on the stove, and you've got all of your cholent pots and everything else that you're serving, the gederot are agabe kira. When the shlishit, the tkiah shlishit started, it was time for anybody who needed to take his pots off of the stove to take them off of the stove. Anybody who needed to cover things with blankets to keep them warm for the morning, as long as it was not a Dover Shemosif Hevel, he would do the Hatmana. And if it was time to do Atlokas Neres, then you would be Matlik like Rabbi Nosson. Then, after the third one, you would wait the amount of time to be able to barbecue that little fish, and that would be the same amount of time, Ladvik Pat Ptanur, Vitokea, Umeiria, Vitokea. Om Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, this is all part of the Braisa. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says, I was Mekabel, that if a person had not yet lit his Shabbos candle, and he's coming to light immediately after the Shesh Tekiyahs, I think all the wine has put Moshe Forman to sleep, no? So he's lighting after the Shesh Tekiyahs, he's allowed to. Because the Chachamim allowed a little bit of time for the Baal HaTokeya to bring the shofar back home. Because otherwise, what was he going to do? He was at this high place where everybody could hear him. So he was given an extra minute or two to get home. And during that time, it would still be Yom. And therefore, in my house, I forgot to do Hadlaka. I could still do Hadlaka. On Marlo, that's ridiculous. It can't be that they gave him time to get home. Where does he live? I mean, it would depend, therefore, in every community, like how long before he's going to blow the shofar. Now, Tata Dvarecha L'Shiurim. You can't create a shir in which every place has a different shir. Ella, the din is, you're right, in a sense, but it was a mokum tsunua yeshlo l'chazan ha-knesset b'rosh gago, the top of the roof where he would blow, had a place that you could put away the shofar, and that was the maximum amount of time. And shoshomei niach shofaro. And the reason was, you cannot be metaltal a shofar, because a mukta, after it's already Shabbos, and you cannot be metaltal a chatzotzra, because this is not a kli that is shayach to use on Shabbos. What? It says, Beferish and Abraisa, you are allowed to carry a shofar. The reason that you are allowed to carry a shofar is because it makes an excellent baby bottle. So what they would do was, they would fill up the shofar with water if a baby needed to drink, and then the nipple of the shofar, so to speak, the mouthpiece, would drip the water out, and you could close it up with your finger and then put the shofar in a position where it would be holding the liquid, and then when the baby needed more, you could use it to feed the baby. And because of that, the shofar is mitaltel. On the other hand, a chatzotzra, which is straight, there's no place for it to hold any kind of liquids, so you couldn't feed the baby with the shofar. With a chatzotzra. So how do you explain the fact that in the bright that says beferish, a shofar is mitaltel, it's only a chatzotzra that's not mitaltel? Rav Yosef, it's not a problem. One is talking about an individual. So if you have your own shofar in your own house, you can feed the baby. Here we're talking about the shofar that belonged to the tzibur. And that shofar, I mean, what are you going to use the shofar of a tzibur for? So over there, there's nothing to do with it. Because of that, it's like a barak bialma, you're putting it away. And therefore, kan b'tzibur, and it was still correct to say that you cannot be carrying the shofar, and therefore they put a place on his roof to put the shofar away.